It's time for the Financial Cafe, airing every Saturday morning at 9 a.m. on 88.7 WSIE The Sound. Today's show is underwritten by The Chef Shop, your hometown kitchen accessory store, where a good cup of coffee starts every day right. The views expressed of the Financial Cafe are those of the hosts and do not represent the views of Southern Illinois University Edwardsville, the SIU Board of Trustees, or WSIE Radio. Securities offered through Nickel Investors Corporation at No. 1 Executive Park, Granite City, Illinois, member FINRA and SIPC.
If I
And now, welcome to the Financial Cafe and our hosts, Larry Lexo and John Graney.
Good morning, John.
Good morning, Larry. Hello, folks. Hope this Saturday finds everyone well. How are you doing, Larry?
I'm doing awesome. Well, let's revisit a little bit of what we were talking about on the last show, and that is a very important topic for everyone. Wills, trusts, powers of attorney, healthcare directives, having the right paperwork done before you need it.
Another morbid show is what we have, is what you're saying?
I know. The next one will be better, I promise.
Yeah, we'll pick things up with next week's show, but right now, we did not finish our discussions on this topic, which was basically the essentials of estate planning. We did cover wills, we covered the medical directive and the financial power of attorney. Today, we need to touch on what's called a revocable living trust, and there's also different other kinds of trusts that can be mentioned in the same breath, but the most common one is what we call the revocable living trust, as well as the living will and how that kind of ties in with the medical directive.
I can't emphasize enough that these are documents which everyone needs in some form or fashion. At the very least, you need to have a power of attorney, durable power of attorney for financial matters in the event that something happens to your spouse, significant other, even if other family member, child, that you have the ability to be able to make directions and to act on their behalf during the time that they are incapacitated. You also need it for, as we talked last week about health care, because if they are going away to college and you don't have the ability to access their medical records or receive medical information, then you could find yourself out in the cold when they're at a time that is needed. So they're just easy things to get done. And let's talk a little bit about how do you prepare, if you're going to do a will, before we get into some of the others, what's going to make it the most cost effective in terms of getting one done?
Most attorneys, if you go in for the initial consultation, they don't charge for that. But after that consultation is over, you are essentially on the clock. So they have billable hours that they have to meet, and if they're talking to you, you are then that billable hour. So it's prudent to go in with a checklist of items that you have already addressed, and then you can present those to your attorney and reduce the amount of time that you spend, which hopefully will reduce the fees that you have to pay to get some of these things drafted.
The more homework that you do, the easier it is going to be on them to produce the documents. So what kind of homework do you need? Well, you need to list each individual who's going to be named in the will. So yourself, your spouse, children, anyone else who is going to be part of that process. The name, the full legal name, obviously, the Social Security number, date of birth, the address, things related to that, so that is all available. Assets. It is best to have a list of assets that you have, your car, your house, bank accounts, 401ks, et cetera, because those often are listed in the will as part of the process. So the more information you can take into them, the fewer questions they have to ask, the less time it's going to take. And guess what? The less time, the less costly it's going to be. So be prepared when you go in to sit down with the attorney. Try and think about, well, okay, if something happens to you and or your spouse, what happens to the kids? Who is going to be taking over as guardian? Who is going to be responsible for their health and well-being? Who's going to be responsible for the financial means to support them? Those are important decisions that you should make, and also talk to the people that you're designating to make sure that they are both willing and capable of acting in those roles in the event that something does happen.
And you want to make sure when you're considering or trying to figure out who you want to take care of your children, make sure that you have the same parenting style, you have the same goals and objectives and so forth, because you want to make sure for your children's sake that there is some similarity during this very difficult time and when choosing that person.
Once you have a will in place, there are a couple of things that actually came up in reality this week in dealing with retirement plan issues. If someone is in a retirement plan and does not complete a beneficiary form, which we strongly recommend to all of our clients, you have to complete a beneficiary form in order to make sure that your desires are carried out in the event something happens. But an individual passed away who was in a plan and they did not have a beneficiary form. So we go to the trust document, which specifies the lineage of the estate passing to those individuals. And the first person it goes to is the spouse, if there is no spouse, as there was not in this case. Then it goes to children. And you would think the definition of a child is fairly straightforward. However, it's not. In the state of Illinois, you have several different categories. This individual had a young son who has a guardian, so you make sure that you have the guardianship papers available. But they had two stepchildren. So what do you think that changes the situation, John?
I didn't realize there were so many definitions of children until you brought this to my attention. But just off the top of my head, I would think that the bloodline lineage would, election pun intended, trump the stepchildren. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Yeah, brain was not working.
Well, the coffee's pretty good, though.
It is. I like this.
We'll get back to that in a moment. But in this case, the stepchildren under Illinois state law were not adopted. That's the key. Had they been adopted, then they would be one of three children who would have received benefit from the estate. They were not adopted. They were stepchildren from a prior marriage and therefore were not eligible to receive a benefit. You also have adopted children. If the adoption process has gone through, then they do become heirs. You have foster children and stepchildren that you've never legally adopted will not automatically receive a share of the estate. Children placed for adoption, children that you place for adoption and who were legally adopted by another family will not receive a share unless the decree of adoption specifically provides for continuation of inheritance rights. So not a simple process. Children born outside of marriage. If you were not married to the child's mother when she gave birth, they will receive a share of your estate if you acknowledge paternity or if during your lifetime or after death a court establishes your paternity. So you might think things are simple. But
sounds like to me the lawyers get the money.
The lawyers get the money, exactly.
And one thing when you're considering the beneficiary form, something that we always recommend, you have a primary beneficiary. If you are married, your spouse will be the primary beneficiary. If you don't want it to be your spouse, good luck. They have to sign off on it, and it has to be notarized that the money is going to go to someone other than a spouse. I've never seen that happen. But you also want to make sure that you have the contingent beneficiary, the secondary beneficiary, because if you are married, more than likely you'll be traveling with your spouse. And if there was an accident, there's a good chance that it would be involved the two of you. So you want to make sure that there's a backup on that form.
Absolutely. And we often get the question on an IRA or 401k pension plan, any qualified money, can I make my trust the beneficiary? And we do not advise that. If you make your trust the beneficiary, then upon death, all of the money becomes immediately taxable, and you give up the right for your beneficiaries to extend out receiving that money and pay tax over their lifetime. So beneficiary designations are extremely important and should be thought about and contemplated before making those decisions. But I guess I digress, John, because we were talking about wills and trusts and
jumped into
beneficiaries.
We are... always guilty of getting lost in tangents. And
I'm on my tangent again.
We'll pull our way back. So we recap the will. We need to recap the medical directive and the financial. Basically, If you become incapacitated, who's going to make those healthcare decisions for you? Actually, on this form, you can choose certain things, no food, no water, to put it bluntly, pull the plug, whatever it may be. On the financial power of attorney, who's going to take care of your financial affairs, pay the bills? If you own a business, who's going to run a business? So you want to be careful in making these decisions. Any other recap items we need to touch on?
I think that covers, you know, we strongly encourage everyone to meet with an attorney. We are not attorneys. We do not give legal advice. The information provided on this show is strictly for information and hopefully to encourage you to take action.
And we do not play one on TV.
We do not play one on TV or on radio, for that matter. So we encourage you to take action, meet with a qualified attorney who does wills and trusts and powers of attorney, healthcare directives. Talk to them. The first consultation, as John mentioned, usually there is no charge, but they will tell you what the cost will be for preparing the documents, and it is well worth it to get those done. If you're going past the basic stuff, the basic wills, powers of attorney, healthcare directives, and so forth, the next step would be to consider doing a trust of some type. And the reasons that you do a trust, there are a number of them. You want to take a shot at one of those, John?
Well, I like the generation skipping trust. It's a way to move money down the line and avoid estate taxes. Not avoid, but certainly minimize. The purpose of the trust is not just how to minimize estate taxes, though that does come into play, but it gives you control from the grave. An example, I had a client in my previous life when I was doing a lot more individual work that had two children. One was financially savvy. The other was spending savvy, shall we say. And the parents were concerned, so they put some stipulations in the trust that they got so much at 30, they got so much at 35, and they had to meet certain requirements, gainfully employed and so forth, contributing to society and the GDP. But basically, they were decent people and responsible people before they got the money. So there's that factor that I like as well.
The revocable living trust is a method of dividing the estate for purposes of avoiding probate, and also in some cases to minimize the estate taxes. The estate tax level, as we mentioned last week, the exemption amount, as it's called, is $5,450,000. So if your total estate, adding everything together, does not exceed that, then it's not likely you'll be subject to federal estate taxes.
So close.
Still
to that
close. We're still counting to determine if John is there yet, but.
We are not.
Yeah. But a marital bypass trust is often used where two trusts are established, one for the husband, one for the wife or significant other. And in that event, upon the first death, then a bypass trust is established. Some of the assets are moved into that trust for the benefit of the survivor. And they likely have their own trust. And you try and balance them out so that either one does not exceed the $5,450,000 limit, and it prevents you from having to go to court and to go through probate to continue to control the assets after the initial death. There are many, many different types of trusts, and again, special needs trusts come to mind. I know of a number of cases of clients where they have a child or children who have special needs, whether it's autism or whether it's any type of illness that would prevent them or disease would prevent them from acting on their own behalf or holding down a job, those types of things, then they can establish a special needs trust, which designates individuals, multiple individuals, to act as trustee and guardian in the event that the parent is no longer available to do that. So you get into more complex issues. They can all be addressed. Again, those types of devices should be reviewed every 3 to 5 years for changes in the tax law, as well as making sure that they still carry out the wishes of the individual who puts them in place.
Absolutely. Yeah, there's a lot of flexibility with the revocable trust, and a lot of people think, oh, it's a trust that once it's drafted, that's it. But the key here is revocable. You can make changes to them, amendments to them as time as situations change and so forth, but it, This one is not etched in stone like some other ones are.
What about our coffee, John?
I like this one. I am, you know, well, we've established it. I don't like hazelnut too much, but I am not a frou-frou flavor coffee kind of guy. Obviously, since my favorite one so far has been the Fog Lifter, which is, you know, the slappy in the face, wake you up, get you going. But this one is the pecan, and I really like it. This may move up into the number two spot, taking over the Jamaican Me Crazy.
That's saying a lot there, John, saying a lot.
I know.
It is the Golden Pecan, regular, not decaf, from Chef Shop. Chunks of buttery
decaf.
Southern.
We don't drink decaf
yeah,
here.
Yeah, I know we don't. I just thought I'd mention it. It is available either way, by the way. Chunks of buttery Southern pecans are mixed right into the popularly flavored coffee. Lusciously rich. It's delicious, and I can't argue with that at all. It can be gotten at the Chef's Shop in Edwardsville, 2320 Troy Road, Edwardsville, Illinois, 62025, in the Schnucks Plaza right next to Target. Phone number 618-659-9840, or check them out on the web at chefsshop.com. But I would give this a 10 out of 10.
Yeah, I'm going to actually go back and get some more of that. I do like this one. This one would be good when you're camping.
Camping would be good if you like to camp. I don't, so that's okay.
I do.
Yeah.
So it'll be good.
So for any individual, having the proper documents, let's talk a little bit about organization of financial documents. I saw a survey recently that indicated that the number one concern of people besides retirement and Social Security, and so I guess there's number two or three, but number one concern that people had in this particular survey was financial organization, getting their financial life in order. And what do we mean by that? Well, we mean that you have a list in writing. Remember about the writing part. You have a list that's in writing listing all of your particular accounts, listing the account numbers, the phone numbers for contact. That includes credit cards, bank accounts, investment accounts, whatever it happens to be, and that you have them all in one place along with passwords for access online. We recommend strongly that you document whether it's Facebook or LinkedIn or Twitter or whatever other social media you happen to be involved in where you have accounts set up, that you have a list of those accounts, the access, the passwords that often change, but what those passwords are, because otherwise they can never be taken down. It takes court order to get many of these offline, and I don't know about you, but I'm not particularly interested in having content that I've posted during my lifetime out there 10 years later for anyone and everyone to comment on.
I'm not dying.
Okay. Well, that's one solution. We can mark that one down.
I'm working on that.
But it is important to get financially organized. There are a number of ways to do it. We have documents. If you want to contact us, either jgraney@nickelfinancial.com or alexo@nickelfinancial.com. We can send you an outline, a PDF fillable form, which would allow you to go through and remind you of many of the accounts that you may have and forgotten about, locations of your will, your trusts, health care, powers of attorney, directives, and those types of things, and having a copy available to not only your significant other, whether it's in a safe deposit box or in a safe in your home, whichever, that people know where it's at. And we do strongly recommend when you complete these types of financial and legal documents that you make your family aware of it and you make children aware of what you've done and what your interests are in terms of carrying those wishes out, because there's nothing worse than being in a situation that we do find clients occasionally from families and parents that do not share financial information or legal information or their wishes for that matter, that they find themselves searching through boxes and boxes and boxes and boxes of paper, if they're older particularly, to find out where these types of documents are, what they've done with them. Are the accounts open? Are the accounts closed? How do you access them? Again, you need a legal directive. If you have a will and you are designated as the representative in the will, the executor, then you get a letter of appointment from the courts, and that gives you authority to access many things online from a legal standpoint. But if that doesn't exist, then again, you're back to hiring an attorney, go before the court, convince them that you have both the right and the interest to take care of those situations and getting appointed to act in that legal capacity.
And a great way is very simple, is using a binder for our corporate clients, for our individual clients. We have a binder that can store all the information. As Larry mentioned, you want to make sure you have a copy with, you know, in your home, a copy in some sort of safe deposit box that's fireproof. If you have minor children, I'm assuming that if you're trusting someone with your children, you can trust them with your financial information, that they, you know, they would have a copy of the binder as well. That way, if something happens, it's easily accessible. As Larry was referencing a recent case that he's handling, it becomes very difficult when the wishes, the paperwork, and so forth isn't there for those survivors to determine what are we supposed to do, how is this supposed to go. It takes a lot of time and sometimes can extend the suffering and so forth from the loss of a loved one.
On some of the listings, we run into different terms that deal with establishing the ownership of property. Let's talk for a moment about joint tenancy, John. Joint tenancy is where either individual owns rights to the property. So in the event of the death of either, it immediately goes to the survivor, especially if it's joint tenants with right of survivorship, as it's called, in labeling an account. If you have joint tenants in common, then if something happens to tenant number one, the property does not go to tenant number two. It goes to tenant number one's heirs or beneficiary. So different ways of listing ownership can determine how assets are passed, whether it goes to the survivor or whether it goes to the beneficiary of the person who is deceased. On revocable living trusts, you have to designate the trustor or trust maker, the grantor by any other words. The trustee is the person who controls the trust, and the beneficiary is the person who benefits from the trust. So you can have someone who set the trust up, you can have the person who directs the trust, and you can have successor trustees in the event that someone happens to the first one. And last but not least, the beneficiary is the one who benefits. They receive all of the benefit of the trust during their lifetime, typically. And at that point, it's designated where the proceeds would go at that point. Simple wills are used in a case that the first death, the entire estate goes to the spouse, as opposed to doing a living trust. And as we talked a little earlier about the marital revocable living trust, you can also have other types of documents put together, the durable power of attorney. I got a couple of questions here. What is an inter vivos trust? Good question, right?
Absolutely.
Inter vivos trust is just another term for a revocable living trust. What about your personal representative? Many states have designated personal representatives, but it's simply a person who acts in the form of an administrator or executor and has directive to act on behalf of your trust in the event that something does happen. Can you designate specific items to go to specific individuals within a will or a trust?
Absolutely.
You can. If you want Uncle Joe to get your favorite shotgun, then you should put it in your trust that he's going to get it. Omission does not indicate that someone is necessarily disinherited. We have had a couple of cases, or I have, where because of certain events within a family, that they wanted to make sure that an individual did not benefit or receive any proceeds from the estate. So they named them specifically and indicated that it was their intent to disinherit that individual.
I had a client that had two daughters, and they wanted to make sure that the son-in-laws or future son-in-laws would not have access to the estate. So it was passed to the daughters, but excluded.
Blended families make it all the more interesting. We have many, many clients who are part of blended families, first marriages, where there's a death or divorce, whatever happens to be. You have children from the first marriage, children from the second marriage, And depending on the survivor, the children of one family member or another may be left out in the cold, unless you do the documents and you list specifically who is to receive what upon an event that occurs and how it's to be distributed, and that you are including and or excluding specific individuals in that situation, because promises made prior to that are not put in writing are not worth the time to repeat because they hold no legal status.
See, by living forever, it avoids all these problems.
By living forever, it does avoid those problems.
Now, should I die, I'm going to plan accordingly, and the last check will bounce.
Yeah, exactly. That's the best way to go. Let's talk about two other terms that come up often, and if you are not aware of them, you should be. So we're going to talk about it. What does it mean when an account is labeled as per stirpes?
I always get these confused.
Per stirpes and per capita. Per stirpes, when you designate beneficiaries, it's a common legal phrase. It's Latin, or so they tell me, which means by bloodline. So, for example, if a beneficiary predeceases the grantor, then the beneficiary's blood descendants would receive that beneficiary's share. Now, let's put that in plain English. If
you,
if you designate a beneficiary, let's say I designate my daughter as beneficiary for a particular account, and the account is labeled per stirpes, and it could be listed on the beneficiary form per stirpes, then in the event of my death and her death, it would then go to her bloodline descendants. It would not revert to the other survivor or to other children if I had other children, which I don't. But nevertheless, per stirpes means that it's a lineal descendant of the individual who is designated as the beneficiary. Per capita, on the other hand, is just the reverse. If I designate my daughter and I had three children, or like John, I had four children, and I designate one of them under per capita as a beneficiary, and they predecease or would die simultaneously with me, then that particular share of the asset would go to the other three, would not go to the individual's bloodline descendants. You should ask on your accounts, whether it's a savings account at the bank, a CD, an annuity, mutual fund, life insurance, whatever the policy is the beneficiary designation per capita or per stirpes?
Because now, is there a default where if it's not listed, or is that something that...
There is no default. The contract, the legal contract, will specify in the fine print, if nowhere else, that in the event that it is not mentioned otherwise, that it will be treated as per stirpes and go through the bloodline descendants, or it would be treated as per capita and shared amongst the other individuals named as beneficiaries. As you can see, it would make a huge difference on an estate. In the event of my parents' estate, they listed the four children they had. One of them was deceased, and therefore their share went to her children. So it was listed as per stirpes as opposed to per capita. It wasn't split amongst the remaining three. So just little tidbits that you have to keep in mind when you're putting these papers together, because it is important to have your wishes expressed and to make sure you understand what that means, as well as how they're carried out.
And the industry certainly doesn't make it any easier for us, because you, as with anything, you have lots of different terms and definitions that mean the same thing, and it can get confusing very quickly.
It is. Again, we are not attorneys. We don't give legal advice. We would strongly, strongly encourage you to work with an attorney in putting together a will, powers of attorney, powers of healthcare directive, at the bare minimum, for your benefit and the benefit of your family. Thanks to WSIE for having us on board to share some financial information. We hope it is beneficial and you find yourself well and possibly using some of this. If you have questions, send them to Jay Graney, that's J-G-R-A-N-E-Y, at nickelfinancial.com, or L-Lexo, L-L-E-X-O-W, at nickelfinancial.com. We'd be happy to take them up on the next show and cover any other interesting topics that you may have in mind. Thanks to the Chef Shop, to both Scott and Nancy for supporting us. They're underwriting the show. And thanks for the Golden Pecan Coffee. It's been great this morning. I wonder what we're having coming up next, John.
Well, we have to choose something a lot more entertaining, shall we say. So we're going to review the markets and how they perform during a presidential election.
It's a presidential election?
That's what I hear.
That's what they say anyway.
I can call it something else, but I won't.
Yeah, we won't go there. All right, wraps up another show. Have a great week, folks. We will talk to you soon.
You've been listening to The Financial Cafe, airing every Saturday at 9 a.m. on 88.7 WSIE The Sound. Today's show is underwritten by The Chef Shop in Edwardsville, your hometown kitchen accessory store, where a good cup of coffee starts every day right. Listeners are invited to send your questions regarding retirement, investments, or any other financial topic that may pique your interest. Send the questions to John at jgraney@nickelfinancial.com or to Larry at lexo@nickelfinancial.com. John and Larry will discuss those questions each week during their Q&A session. If you prefer, they will respond to you in private. Thanks for listening to The Financial Cafe on 88.7 WSIE The Sound.